Welcome to We Mentor Mondays with Nancy podcast. Get inspired. Break through to new dimensions with your entrepreneurial peers on the journey of self-leadership mastery and life success. Reinvent or evolve yourself as you redesign your business. Dual innovation. Take charge of who you next become. Feel more deeply to think, act, lead, and mentor more clearly and more effectively. Learn something new from our conversation today.
Nancy, thank you so much for having me on the show. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I'm so grateful to you for really giving me the space to talk about my work that I'm so very passionate about.
Welcome to We Mentor Mondays. I'm Nancy. Today's mentor guest is Dr. Amy Bantham of Move to Live More. I invited Dr. Amy Bantham into this conversation to discuss the public health impact of the coronavirus pandemic and get some ideas of what we as business owners can do regarding the effects that the pandemic has had on our mental and physical health. But first, let's get to know Amy a little bit. Hey, Amy. Hi.
Hi, Nancy. How are you? Thanks so much for having me on the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so glad you're here. How are you feeling this morning or today?
I'm feeling very anticipatory about our conversation. I can't wait to discuss public health with you and to just take the conversation where it goes.
Wonderful. And where in the United States am I reaching you at?
Sure. I am located in Somerville, Massachusetts, which is in the Boston area.
Okay. Very nice. How long have you been living there?
That's a great question. I came up from Washington, D.C. in the mid-90s to go to graduate school, and I have been here ever since, with the exception of 2 years when I lived abroad. So I've lived in different communities around Boston, but we settled in Somerville in 2007.
To give you a little bit of background about Amy, she has 20 years of experience working in consulting, health and fitness, and healthcare. Her mission is to help people live healthier, longer, more active lives. She's the CEO and founder of Move to Live More, a research and consulting firm addressing physical inactivity, obesity, chronic disease, and social determinants of health through cross-sector collaboration and innovation. Move to Live More services include strategic planning, qualitative and quantitative research. So she's not only collecting the math and calculations of research, but she's also collecting stories, which is the qualitative part, translating research into policy, coalition building, and program design, implementation, and evaluation. So Amy holds a Doctor of Public Health from the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, with concentrations in health communication and obesity epidemiology and prevention. Her doctoral research focused on physician exercise prescriptions/referrals and patient exercise behavior change. She's a certified group exercise instructor, personal trainer, and health and wellness coach. She also holds a Master of Science from Northeastern University, a Master of Public Policy from the Harvard Kennedy School, and a Bachelor of Arts from Yale University. So you've really done a lot of education along your path.
I think that's a very true statement. One of the qualities that I most admire in my family is that they are lifelong learners.
Yeah.
And they instilled that in me. And I have been very fortunate that I've been able to go back and get additional education throughout my career. And often I did it while I was still working for example, for my master's from Northeastern, but I was able to take the time and step away from work and focus full time on the Doctor of Public Health. And I'm so glad that I was able to do that.
That sounds fantastic. So I would like to learn a little bit more about how you grew up and what it was like growing up in your home. What were 4 or 5 to 6 words that would describe each of your caretakers that raised you?
Yeah, well, I think I mentioned the lifelong learning, and I think both of my parents are very, very invested in education. It was absolutely their highest priority for us as kids and as a family. My father is very focused. He's very curious. His favorite question to ask people are, what are you reading? Okay. And he truly is very interested in the answer. And he's looking for book recommendations for himself. He's always reading a fiction book and a nonfiction book. And he's really curious what it tells him about other people. And he's instilled that love of reading in me. I was an avid, avid reader growing up, and he instills that love of reading in my children, his grandchildren, and he actively buys them books on a weekly basis. We have these wonderful shipments of Amazon that show up here.
Oh, that's so cool. How many kids do you have?
Oh, I have three children.
Okay. Oh, that's fun for your parents. And what about your mom? So you grew up in a 2-parent home?
Yes, and my mother also very focused on education. I remember her saying, you know, if it came down to eating or making sure that you all had the best education, I would prioritize education. And she really instilled that in me. And this past year, when we've been working with the COVID pandemic response, trying to figure out a way to get kids back in person in school, that prioritizing education has shown through, because it's become my number one priority to get our kids back in buildings where they belong. I'd say my mom is also very protective of her family, of her kids. She puts family first. She comes from a long line of worriers, and so she would always remind us, you know, don't worry about things that you can't control. So that's something that we do have to keep reminding ourselves of, because we're a little bit a family of worriers. So putting aside what we can and can't control is important.
Yeah. And what did each of your parents do?
Sure. So my father was an attorney. And my mother was a nurse and taught nursing. And then when she had my oldest brother, I have 2 older brothers, she became a stay-at-home mother. And when I was 16, and so old enough to get myself places, she went back and had her second career as an English as a second language teacher.
Oh, wow, what a switch. Did she have to go back to school then in order to teach English as a second language or first language?
She was constantly, you know, getting her credentials, and she spent so much time and investment into developing lesson plans. She started doing it with a friend of hers and really focused on teaching adults in our community English as a second language. And many of her students were, I believe, from South America, from Europe, and she had a very large segment of her student body that were from Japan, which really fostered my interest in Japan. And she is one of the reasons why I first went abroad and lived and studied in Japan.
Oh, did you learn the language as well?
I did. I went as a high school student. My mother volunteered in our high school library, and she saw that there was a scholarship. It was a partnership between the Japanese government and the U.S. government, the United States Senate. And it was a scholarship where they awarded 2 scholarships per state. So I went, I applied and I went through the whole process, and I was one of the two selected from Connecticut. So 100 of us went off to Japan the summer between my junior and senior year of high school. And first we went to Washington, D.C., and we met our senators, and we went to the Capitol, and we went to the Japanese embassy, and then we went over to Japan, and we got to visit the U.S. embassy in Tokyo. We got to visit the Diet, their parliament, and then we went and we lived with host families all over Japan for the summer. And that really started me on a path for studying Japanese and going back and living. And I returned to Japan multiple times, and I continue studying Japanese to this day. It was actually my major in college.
Wow. Oh, good for you. That second language is so important in connecting with people from other cultures. So you grew up in Connecticut. What part of Connecticut?
Koskob, Connecticut, a suburb of New York City.
Okay. And you said that you have two older brothers.
That's right.
And any younger siblings? Or are you the youngest?
No, I was the youngest. I am the youngest. Very much. I think birth order definitely has a bit of a role in how we navigate the world.
Yeah. So how would you say that being the youngest is different than being the oldest of what you've observed?
Yeah, it was interesting. My friends in college would tease me after I'd come back from being home and spending time with my brothers that I was a little bit quicker to respond. I felt like I was being teased by older brothers again, who tended to tease me about how hard I worked and I was always studying. And so it was interesting because my oldest brother is much older than I am. He's 5.5 years older, which is very different. So I have three kids, twins, and an older child who's 2.5 years older. So our age differential is 2.5 years. So they're very close in age. Whereas my brother was headed off to college when I turned 12. And so I think for a certain amount of time, in his mind, I was forever 12.
Okay, sure. Yeah, he missed that time with you. So yeah, is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. And then my other older brother, the middle child, he was just 2 years older than me. So I did get 2 years alone with my parents after he headed off to school.
Nice. And what was really, you're mentioning some of the things you're traveling. And so it sounds like there was a lot of fun and learning in your household. Is that how you would describe growing up in your home?
Yeah, I would say that everything was really seen as a learning experience. Traveling as a family, traveling for summer enrichment. I remember my father and I would go off to the library on Saturday mornings. And we had a wonderful public library, and he and I would just come out with arms piled high with books, and we would take in tote bags, and we would come out with books and movies, and then we could just settle in and read, and then go back the following week. I'm a fast reader. I definitely had a lot of practice. I could absolutely get lost in books.
Oh. Sounds like Bill Gates. He does that too. Like wherever he travels, he's got like this tote bag full of books.
Yeah. The Kindle made a very big difference in my life, because before I would pack a suitcase ready to head off on a trip, and it would be filled with books, and then I wouldn't have any room for any clothes. And so having just being able to pack a Kindle and a charger really makes a big difference. Because when I'm on vacation, I get back to my early days of reading when I could just sit and read a book a day.
Wow. That's incredible.
I miss having the time for that. When I was back at school getting my Doctor of Public Health, I essentially really didn't have time to do any reading for fun. I read before bed, but I was reading for classes. And of course, the purpose of reading there was to try to get everything done and fall asleep reading. And now I get to read for pleasure. And it's such a nice thing to be able to return to.
Yeah, that is nice. And what did you learn in your family about taking financial and emotional risks as a child and into your teens?
Yeah, it's interesting. I was such a hard worker, so focused on school and doing well at school. You know, I try to live my life having few regrets. And if I look back and I could tell my younger self, don't work so hard. spend just a little bit more time, you know, having fun, taking a few risks. I would say that I'm not much of a risk taker. And so the ability to start my own business and self-identify as an entrepreneur has been a big mind shift for me.
So how long of a process, like when was the idea of starting your own business? When did that start showing up in your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a great idea. A great question. And I guess I would say I started a consulting firm, I guess in my late 20s, I'd worked for a consulting firm that ended up going bankrupt. And so I was looking for new work and started, had a few clients and launched a very small consulting firm. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the freedom to choose my projects. But again, I ended up taking the safe option and ended up going with another consulting firm and essentially disbanded mine. But when I was, I think it really cemented when I was in my Doctor of Public Health program, because it's not only a public health training program, but it's also a leadership training program.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were taking classes on innovation and entrepreneurship and really having us step into that space. And so I started thinking about what I wanted to do after I graduated. And I looked at the various sectors that I was most interested in, healthcare, health and fitness, and communities. And I saw that there were people who were working in one of the sectors, maybe two of the sectors, but not really all three. Mm. So I thought, well, there's space for me to step into. And this is something I'm really, really, really passionate about. I came from the health and fitness industry. I went back to school because I wanted to connect the health and fitness industry to healthcare.
Oh, yeah.
And you mentioned that my doctoral research was on physicians counseling their patients on physical activity and prescribing exercise and referring patients to health and fitness centers. But the more time I spent really looking at community health and population and health and how what we do outside of the healthcare system drives health outcomes, more I realized that I want that just connecting healthcare and health and fitness wasn't enough. I wanted to work with people who were moving the dial on, they call it whole person health. So every aspect of health, mental health, physical health, non-medical determinants of health, where people live, where they work, how they play, where they connect with others in the community. So every single aspect of health became more and more critical to the vision for where I wanted to be and where I wanted to work. And that's how Move to Live More came about.
Oh, excellent. And how long ago did that come about?
That was a full year ago. So okay. I ended up launching Move to Live More as part of my doctoral research. And so I was going through that process a year ago, January, with finding the name and really thinking, cementing the vision for my company. And then I defended my doctoral research in March and off I went.
Okay. And how's it going?
It's going well. It's interesting. People say, what a strange time to launch a business in the very beginning of a pandemic. And I guess my answer is yes, unless you're working in the public health field, it was a good time. And I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for innovation, even if you're not working in the public health field.
Yeah. Like, do you have some examples?
Well, it's interesting. I think a lot of people who were laid off early in the pandemic, who were in lockdown, sitting at home saying, maybe now is the time to do what I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I had, well, I'll tell you a story. So I defended my dissertation March 9th. And that weekend, I was supposed to fly to California to present my doctoral research and to connect with people at a health and fitness industry convention and to talk about my new business and network and hopefully bring on new clients. And instead of doing that, I was sitting at home on my couch saying, okay, I don't get to fly there. I don't get to present my research. I don't get to connect with people. What should I be doing? So I sat on my couch for a couple of weeks and a friend reached out and said, we're bringing together a group of doctors of public health to launch a volunteer effort to help local boards of health with their pandemic response. Do you want to be involved? And I said, yes, absolutely. I don't want to sit here and feel like I'm doing nothing. I want to do something.
Yeah.
I was educated and trained to lead. It's time to lead. And so I led a team of 30 volunteers helping my city's Board of Health with their pandemic response, calling and giving residents test results and giving them isolation and quarantine guidance. And so I did that for a couple months. And then I said to the Health and Human Services Director, who I worked with most closely, I said, well, I'm really trying to start my business, so I need to scale back the volunteer work. And he said, can we hire you?
Oh, perfect.
And they brought me on board to as a researcher to do research for them, but also as someone who translates research into policy to really research best practice and then set up a system that reflects best practice. And so I set up their contact tracing system, and I've been very involved in setting up their school testing system. So it's very consistent with what I, as the CEO and founder of Move to Live More, set out to do with my company, which is the skills and the research and the translating research into policy. It is focused on infectious disease more than really my focus, which is chronic disease, but it has a really strong social determinants of health and health equity focus, which is very consistent with my vision around community health. Mm. So it was I guess it was the silver lining of the pandemic response.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that took really a strong shape and you could see where you needed to be.
Yes, absolutely. I saw where the need was.
Yeah.
With the local public health. And it's still, I'm still able to do my work, which is in other sectors, healthcare and health and fitness, but it is definitely a very key piece of the community focused work that I do.
Nice. And you also started a podcast.
I did.
Yes. So tell me what the focus is and how is that working for you?
Yeah, was recommended to start a podcast by a former classmate of mine from the Harvard Kennedy School. And when he was starting his business, he also launched the podcast really as a way to network and bring in clients. And I have really enjoyed doing it. It's a way for me to put my money where my mouth is in terms of living my vision for my company. So I try to invite thought leaders onto my podcast who are working in healthcare, in health and fitness, and or communities. And I try to, as best as possible, alternate guests and from each of the sectors, and I try to connect them. I try to really focus on themes of chronic disease, obesity, physical inactivity, and non-medical determinants of health. I have a strong health equity focus. I have a vision and mission of amplifying the voices of communities of color and women. So I try to make sure that my podcast guests reflect that as well. And I've just been able to have the most fascinating conversations about system-wide solutions to these problems that we wrestle with that contribute to poor health outcomes. And so I've enjoyed it. I've learned a tremendous amount, and I've been able to do one season of 25 episodes, and I am in my second season. I guess I'm now on my fourth episode.
Okay. And what are you learning most about the three areas of your focus from your podcast guests that maybe you hadn't thought about before?
It's almost a validation of my vision for my company, which is the need for cross-sector collaboration, this knocking down silos.
Yeah.
And some of the most interesting conversations I've had with people have been around knocking down silos. How do you get the right people in the room, at the table, talking about ways to improve a community's health outcomes?
Right. And are you familiar with the Blue Zones work?
Yes.
Anyways, they have traveled the world focused on centenarians and breaking down what different communities are doing that are contributing to people living longer.
Mm-hmm.
And are you finding that that's kind of fits really well with what you're doing? There was a community in Minnesota that we went down and visited, and they worked with the Blue Zone in restructuring like part of the city. So like restaurants in small towns having more options for healthy, more vegan choices and vegetarian choices and a lot more vegetables in general. And well, that's all the vegan diet is, which we've launched into my husband and daughter and I in January 15th, and we're still going strong. So,
great.
Yeah, it's interesting because these transformations, or like in this particular city, gosh, I'm just trying to, I'll put it in my show notes and I'll put the episode to where we talked about the Blue Zones, because it was so, we went to the town and we looked at the streets. The Blue Zone group met with the city planners, and they changed the structure of the main street to widen the streets a little bit more and narrow some of the corners so that people will drive slower, and moved a lot of the businesses to make it really friendly for them to put their goods outside so people can stroll and wander outside. And they changed their park systems and, you know, sidewalks, making it easier for people to go on longer walks around different lakes and in the area. And so I'm reminded as you're talking that that's kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, I like the Blue Zones because they focus, they look at these communities where there's longevity. And when I was naming my company, I decided on Move to Live More. And there's a little bit of ambiguity in Live More, because Live More can be living longer, but I also think it's important to live better longer.
Yeah.
And I think the Blue Zones also take into account that quality of life. And the other aspect, which I think the Blue Zones also recognize, is the really important role that environment plays. And I've had podcast guests on who talk about really having, it's not just about choices in terms of getting people out to be physically active. It's about infrastructure. It's about design of the community. It's about a walkable community. It's sidewalks and safe places to walk. It's about parks where people can access affordable places to be physically active. And it's about safety. Not just safety from cars, but safety from harm when you're out walking at night, for example. And so I think it's really important, and the lens that I look at it is this, it's not just personal choices, but it's very much the environment. And how you have, and this is sort of my mantra for Move to Live More, and I repeat it over and over on my podcast, having safe, affordable, accessible, inclusive places to be physically active. And Blue Zones aren't just focused on physical activity. That's a big focus of mine. But they're also looking at healthy eating, not only active living, but healthy eating.
Well, and the collaborative, going through cross sectors. So working with schools and working with mayors and city councils and figuring out the budgets. So they're off the highway and how they had to change a little bit of the structure of the highway or at the different roads. And so, you know, it's like what you're talking about is bringing the different sectors in our communities together so that they can problem solve and do it as a whole, more holistic perspective.
Absolutely. It's getting all of the stakeholders at the table. It's the municipal government, it's the small businesses, it's the schools, it's civic organizations, it's advocacy groups. There's so many aspects to it, and having them all at the table and helping to inform the decision making and, as you said, the budgeting.
And one of the things that I've seen in our neighborhoods this last year is like so many people were going to clubs to work out. And now, you know, they were staying in their homes, clubs were closed. And so I never knew we had so many young people in our community. But, you know, everybody is like walking all the time and running and, you know, doing all sorts of things that we're seeing in the neighborhood. It's really wonderful. But there's also been part of this, we've been forced into more of a sedentary lifestyle. So what have you been seeing over the last year? And what do you think, as we close out our conversation, what are some things business owners, like who can they collaborate with is one thing. And it's a bigger question because it depends upon the industries that you're in. But how can business owners address some of the things that they're experiencing in their businesses? Because many business owners too are, you know, having people on screens more.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned that clubs are closed, people are at home, there's significant isolation. We've seen incredible drops in physical activity levels, which, to be honest, weren't that high to begin with, about 20%, 23% of Americans meeting physical activity guidelines for strength, conditioning and cardiovascular and aerobic.
It's only 23%?
23. Yeah, 23% meeting both those guidelines. And so we had low activity levels to begin with, and those are down about 30%.
Oh my God.
Not surprisingly, sedentary time and screen time up about equivalent amounts, 30%. People, you know, in some cases, in severe lockdowns, people weren't able to get out to, certainly not able to go to rec centers or clubs. Many cases, not even able to go to parks or playgrounds or playing fields. So cut off, isolated, we're hungry for social connectedness. Our mental health is suffering significantly. And so there is this need for looking at post-pandemic, how we get people moving, how we get people connected with other people. And I think that's something that we as a nation, as communities, as people engaged around physical activity need to think about. And I do think that there's certainly a role for business owners to think through what that looks like. We're envisioning what business life. It feels like almost every day that I see a headline that talks about re-envisioning office work post-pandemic. Will people want to continue to be at home? Will they want to come back? All of these question marks. And how can we incorporate wellness and building a culture of wellness and health into that post-pandemic working life?
Yes. And we'll be talking more of that in our second conversation, too. So we'll have more concrete things that we all can be doing as business owners to participate in kind of post-pandemic, what we can start building into our culture and what would a wellness culture look like. So those are some good avenues that we can kind of explore in our next conversation. I'm kind of excited about that. Is there anything else you would like to share as we close out this conversation, Amy?
No, I don't think so, Nancy. I'm looking forward to our next one as well.
Okay. And thanks for your insights. I appreciate that. And I'm really sitting with the shock of, you know, 23%, you know, of the population was really fitting the requirements for physical activity. And that has dropped 30% during the last year. That's really, wow, a jaw dropper.
Yeah. Yeah, to be fair, that is both aerobic and strength training. So it's a little bit higher standard. The number just about doubles if you're looking at either or of the guidelines. But bottom line, not enough of us are moving the way that we need to move.
Okay. Good. And we'll talk more about how to do that too in our next conversation. So thank you so much for being our guest mentor today. And thanks, Mike Cabea, sound engineer, videographer, photographer, mon frère de notre mère, brother from another mother. And thank you, listener, for tuning in. And we'll see you all next week. Do you want to build upon your leadership skills and become more effective as a business owner? Do you want to evolve yourself as you redesign your business? This is a dual innovation process. We've been doing this kind of work since 1992, helping small business owners and emerging entrepreneurial leaders with self-leadership mastery, business ownership success, and that leads to life success. We focus on the dual innovation journey of reinventing yourself as you redesign your business. We do this with one-on-one strategic mentoring sessions. We have several types of labs that you can participate in with your other peers. Both our entrepreneurial leadership and mentoring lab, which you can really get into the crux of how to run your business more effectively and become more competent. We have meaningful conversations that help with developing a culture that will work for you. I do weekly meditation and yoga that you can participate in to evolve yourself as you redesign your business. You can also sponsor this podcast. We're always looking for people to support our programming, build out our programming with us, and I especially love promoting you. You can get involved in all those different areas because when we mentor, you design a better life, a more fulfilling future as an entrepreneurial leader slash innovator, as a competent business owner slash practitioner, as a mentor slash role model, and as a human being and master of self. Every client starts with a desire to shift something, clarify something, overcome challenges, grow profitability. We started with one entrepreneur. We've mentored thousands. We're ready to work with you. When you show up, we're here. So to get started, go to wementor.com. You can also call me at 612-804-8920, or you can reach me through email, nancy@wementor.com. Get ready and take the next step today.